This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Could now be the right time for a mortgage or refi? We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, the report on consumer prices leads today's data. While there are updates on the U.S.-China trade talks and Brexit, Andrew Bush is joining us, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, also a political economist. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Andy, let's begin with the trade talks with the U.S. and China. Not a lot of optimism going into the talks, but the fact that they're talking at least seems to be good.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, there's just so much information that's coming out, so many things that are conflicting as these reports about whether there's progress made or not progress made. Earlier in the week, the Chinese leaked out that no progress was being made at lower levels. But then President Trump tweeted out that he will meet with Chinese Vice Premier Liu on Friday. Stocks have been rallying on this news, but it's really hard to say what will come out of this. It's almost anybody's guess, but I would look for a minor agreement to occur here so the U.S. and China can move forward, and perhaps the president can back down on some of these tariffs that he's put on the Chinese.
Ultimately, until there's a deal, there's really no reason to get excited or overly panicked, right? I mean, it's just a lot of back and talk and a lot of leaks.
Yeah, and that's the problem with this. And the markets are reacting to it. I mean, you've seen stocks go up, you know, almost to near 3,100, then down to 2,800. And it's amazing how it just keeps going back and forth in this range as we get information out on these talks. But at some point, we're going to get something. And I would look for, I mean, if coming out of these talks, the best thing you could, you know, hope for is to get a minor agreement, maybe on agriculture, maybe on some of the technology issues that the U.S. is working through. But the key thing I would look for is whether or not President Trump holds off from doing the additional tariffs that he proposed on October 15th, but then maybe even backing off of, meaning reducing some of the tariffs he's already put on.
Let's talk about the UK and Brexit. Sounds like there may be a deal between the UK and Ireland, and that could certainly smooth things over.
Yeah, can I just say this? Thank goodness for Brexit, because it really makes our issues so much less important.
Yes, much less difficult, right? Yeah.
It is. It's so existential for those countries, and specifically with the UK. Just to show how complicated this is, everyone should pull up a map of the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, and Ireland, because you begin to see what the problem is that Northern Ireland is part of the UK. And if there is a pullout of the EU and Ireland stays in and Northern Ireland has to go with the UK, they need to actually have a physical border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And of course, back in the 1990s, that was something that they negotiated. Not having a physical border was one of the reasons that they stopped all of the fighting and all of the terrorist, however you want to call it, but all the IRA activity. And so that's what's at heart about the negotiations between the UK and Ireland right now. And there seems to be a pathway forward. The positive news has led the British pound to rally. We'll see what comes out of it. But this is a major, major breakthrough, if true.
Always good analysis and insight. Thanks for being with us, Andy. Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Coming up, how low will mortgage rates go? Is it time to refi? Mortgage rates have fallen once again. Let's get the latest numbers and a look at the overall market. Guy Sakala is joining us, publisher Inside Mortgage Finance, based in Bethesda, Maryland. All right, Guy, how low have they gone? How are they looking these days?
The rates this week are about 3.6%, which, as most people know, historically, that's a great rate. They don't show any signs of moving up. In fact, they probably should be a little lower than that. Most mortgage rates are pegged off the 10-year Treasury, which is close to 1.5%. By that measure, mortgage rates should be closer to probably 3.4% now. But it's certainly a great time to either refi and consolidate loans or purchase a home. You're not going to do much better than we're at now.
Now, what do you think is keeping them from being at that level where you think they should be?
Mostly because lenders don't have to lower them anymore to get business through the door. Activity and borrower demand is pretty strong now, and frankly, they don't have to lower it. They can make more money by charging a slightly higher rate. You know, for consumers, that means it really pays to shop around more than ever, and it doesn't hurt to try to negotiate with a lender.
So, yeah, simple supply and demand, it sounds like.
Exactly.
If someone's thinking about refiing, at what point does it make sense? Because you're going to have some closing costs, or if there's no closing costs, you're going to pay more in the rate. At what point, how much of a drop do they have in order for it to make sense to refi?
Generally, you need at least 0.5%, if not more than that. But the easiest way to do it is just to compare your mortgage payments. If your mortgage payment now is $800 a month and they're going to say $600 a month, okay, you know you're saving $200, and how much are your closing costs and what's the payback period for that? You really don't want a payback period more than a year, maybe a year and a half.
Talk about the challenge of trying to time the mortgage interest rate market. A lot of people maybe have been thinking about a refi for a while, but they don't want to refinance only to find out rates go lower a few weeks later.
Yeah, I guess the rule is don't get too greedy because rates could also go up. If you find out that the math works and that you can get a good rate, and let's face it, anything anywhere near 3.5% is going to hold up over time and be a great rate, but it's next to impossible to time it when it's at rock bottom.
Is there just an interesting psychology here? As rates have been so low for so long, not everyone can remember back when rates were up in the double digits, and so they're almost stuck on, I want a rate that's in the threes, otherwise I'm not getting it.
Yeah, and that's what we've seen in the housing market. As you might recall, almost exactly a year ago, rates almost hit 5%. And for most people, that was just unacceptable. And the housing market suffered, particularly home purchases. But you're right. Historically, I think we're going to get to the point where 5% looks pretty good.
Has the fact that rates have stayed low, has that helped at all housing prices rebound from the big crash?
Yes. Housing prices have been, moving upward. And it all depends on the location. But where there's demand, the prices go up, and where there's less demand, the prices have stayed fairly flat. But on the whole, home prices are probably up 5 or 6% a year over the last 2 or 3 years.
Thanks so much for the information. Always appreciate you being on. Guy Sakala, publisher at Inside Mortgage Finance. Up next, Technology Thursday. Your boss may be spying on you right now as we speak.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Another chance for you to win $1,000. Keyword for cash is just ahead. The connected world brings with it privacy concerns, including in the workplace. Let's discuss what your employer may be monitoring. Rick Cobb is joining us, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. Rick, this has gotten easier as technology has grown. What sorts of things can employers be spying on?
Well, there's a couple of ways to define spying. They have access to virtually anything that is on your computer and quite possibly your smartphone, particularly if it's going through company servers and systems. There's two things that they do. So one of them certainly is to improve the ability to work with the employees so they can measure the words that you use in your emails to find out your engagement, your time online at work, your location, those sorts of things. And a lot of it's benign. They're trying to improve the work environment. But on the other end of it, they can look at your location, phone usage, fitness data, if you're wearing a smart device like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, your computer usage, your movements, feedback, pretty much anything you put in an email. And Google, if you're using some of the Google G Suite products, can go pretty all the way down to just even drafts that you put together that you haven't even sent to anybody yet. So it's a pretty significant access to your personal space as well as your workspace.
I remember an insurance broker one time that I'm friends with telling me that he had to be careful what he wrote to me, even as a friend, if we were joking around, because there were keywords that the company was looking for in emails to make sure that employees were treating customers correctly. So this isn't someone sitting there literally one by one going through your emails. They just have keywords and other things set up to be able to check things.
It's probably more complicated than that and more sophisticated. So the artificial intelligence and machine learning and the algorithms that can be written, there was software, probably 15 years ago that would do keyword search out of a scanned resume. But now you've got algorithms that are looking for the number of pronouns and how you use them, et cetera. And there's a lot of psychometrics that you can evaluate out of someone's writing that will tell you basically what kind of mood they're in.
So when it comes to employees, briefly, what should they do about this? There's really not much they can do. Just sort of get used to it?
There really isn't. There's not any that I was able to uncover. There are no specific sorts of state or federal regulations around that. As a matter of fact, the government has certainly in the last few years exercised the right to subpoena information from government servers. You're at the mercy of a couple of things, one of them is the ethics of the organization that they flat out don't. They have a policy, or they've made it clear they don't want to pry into people's personal lives unduly, or I suppose incompetence if you've got an IT department that isn't capable of doing that. But on the other end of it, the systems are so sophisticated now, and when you have flash drive memory as opposed to magnetic, it's almost impossible to erase that memory permanently. So that, I guess that's on your permanent record for life.
Yeah, certainly got to pay attention to it. Thank you so much, Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas. Still ahead, Technology Thursday. Scammers set their sights on the millennial generation.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Cyber-based scammers are taking their game to a new level. We'll learn how you can protect yourself in Technology Thursday. Maintaining an emergency fund is important. Not having one can end up impacting your investment portfolio. Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle presents a budget she's touting as balanced with no new taxes or fees. Two Florida businessmen with ties to Rudy Giuliani have been arrested on campaign finance violations. On Wall Street, the Dow up 116 points. The NASDAQ is up 32 and the S&P is up 15 points. Oil is up a little more than 1%. Beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland. Chance for some scattered rain showers later this afternoon. Heading to a high of 73. Right now, it's 64 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are gaining ground today. Let's find out what's going on. Jeff Kilberg is joining us, CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Jeff, as you've been looking around today, what are you seeing? Why are we rising?
Well, Cisco, it's an emotional roller coaster. We saw last night, overnight, the markets were actually down 1% in the S&P 500. And this is all contingent. It's all hinged upon the U.S.-China trade tariff conversations that are being hosted right now in Washington, D.C. So markets are on high alert. We're trying to get some type of optimistic view that maybe we get a mini deal. Maybe we get a big deal. But we need some type of deal to happen for the market to move forward.
Yeah, and what is an investor to do? Because this thing's been dragging on for a long time now. You get a tweet. You get a leak, something positive, something negative. You get a meeting, you get canceled meetings. Until there's a deal, it's just really tough to know what to do.
It is, Cisco. It's like days of our lives. We're living it. And every day we come out with a new type of rumor circulating the markets. But we do think that the U.S. administration wants to make a deal. More importantly, China needs to make a deal. So I think this is a really imperative day. We should be able to take away something from this. But you're absolutely right. We're going into earnings season next week. And all these multinational companies, they need some type of certainty. And if we get some type of deal, it doesn't have to be a grandioso deal, Cisco. We just need some type of deal. Something to sink our teeth into so we can have some certainty and move forward, because I think the market moves substantially higher if we get some certainty.
Several story stocks that we want to pick your brain about today. Let's begin with Delta. Delta shares down a little more than 2.5% today. They're saying higher costs are a problem.
They are seeing higher costs, but also our friends over at Morgan Stanley, they lowered their price target. They dropped it from $63 down to $59. So here it is down 3%, trading about $52. They're still saying it's going to move higher, but Delta has not been a bad stock. I mean, year to date, it's still up 10%. I've actually owned American Airlines, and that's been a pretty rough road. So Delta, it's one of the better airlines, even though it's having a rough one today.
Now, Bed Bath & Beyond struggled for a while. They announced a new CEO, and man, the stock's going crazy today. It's up almost 20%.
Talk about bringing a new quarterback. Holy smokes. They brought in a new quarterback. The CEO is actually a former executive from Target, Mark Triton, and he's a stud. So all of a sudden, you're seeing a 20% pop in Bed Bath & Beyond. It's still down 8.5% year-to-date. It's been a pretty rough road for Bed Bath & Beyond, but this change of leadership really moves the direction of the company.
Now, PG&E, this is the utility in California. They are cutting off power throughout, I don't even know how many dozens of counties in California, trying to prevent wildfires. Because of that, the stock is really getting hit today, down 28%. What are we to make of this? Utilities don't seem to go out of business very often.
Well, PG&E, this is what it must feel like when Khalil Mack sacks you, because it's down 29% today. Year-to-date, it's down 53%. But this is really interesting, Cisco. You know, the 12-month target was slashed all the way down to $4. But this is based and predicated on the news that the judge in this PCG bankruptcy case will now allow creditors to present an alternative bankruptcy plan. That's the component right there that's really moving the market lower.
So when it comes, though, to PG&E, they are the electricity provider. It's not like they can disappear at some point. So should investors maybe look at this a little differently?
They can't, but there's so much uncertainty between the shareholders. Will the shareholders get wiped out in this bankruptcy course? Bondholders, shareholders, it's a little bit of a tug and war, so that we don't have clarity, and that's why you're seeing a knee-jerk reaction. So I would stay away. If you're an owner on this, I think you've definitely endured a lot of pain, and you have to see it out. But from a speculative perspective, I would stay far away because you could get shocked on this electrical stock.
All right, let's back out a little bit. Think more on the macro level when it comes to investing. I've had a lot of people on the show say it's time to get defensive. Many of them have gotten defensive because of what we've seen in some of the data that's been coming out over the last several weeks. How are you feeling about it? Are you encouraging people to get defensive?
Well, we've been an owner of gold since last December. We've liked utilities, but we also still like technology. So I agree with that defensive posture, but it's all contingent upon this U.S.-China trade tariff conversation. And what's interesting, Cisco, is that if we get something to sink our teeth into, like I said earlier, all of a sudden the Fed policy, we have a big Fed meeting at the end of the month. It's all one big orchestra. Everyone's playing together here. So the Fed's reacting to the U.S.-China trade tariff conversations. I know the data is weak. I know global growth is weakening, but that's not a newsflash. So I think the market still the ability to go higher, but it's all predicated on a deal out of the U.S.-China trade tariff conversation.
Thanks for all the analysis. Jeff Kilberg, CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Up next, Technology Thursday, younger people becoming victims of cybercrime.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday here on the Noon Business Hour, and this afternoon we're putting the spotlight on cyber scams. They continue to get more and more sophisticated. Now they are targeting multiple generations. We welcome Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescience Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based here in Chicago. Jerry, often I think people assume that younger people, they're so used to technology, it's always been a part of their lives, they assume that they're probably not going to get scammed, and that's just not the case.
No, not at all. Actually, the millennials are being targeted more frequently than the baby boomers. While the baby boomers are still losing more money as a result of cyber attacks because they have money, the millennials and Gen Xers are really being targeted because they're an easy target.
So what do these targets look like? It seems like younger people are using email less and less. Is that still how they're going after them?
No, they're doing they continue to do email, but they do texts. It's more social media and websites. And millennials now are doing everything digitally. You talk to everybody digitally. You check into, different places. And so hackers get into these sites and are able to use the trust that these guys have in technology to hack them and to get their data. So it's really as a result of the fact that they have been using technology for so long, and they just think it's safe.
So how do you protect yourself against this? Because the scammers just get more and more sophisticated. They're able to make it seem like they are legit. You know, they're the bank or the investment house or whatever that they're trying to say they are. So how can we protect ourselves?
Well, you know, first thing, you know, quit trusting everybody, right? It's like my ma used to tell me. But seriously, rather than going in and using every different type of cloud service out there or every single website, which younger people are more willing to do, they want to find a product, they'll go to any website. Stay to the name brand ones. Stay to the ones that you've heard of before. Don't use your credit cards or payments online. Use a payment service of some sort. You know, the things that we generally say. But the other side of it is don't share all of your information with everyone. Social media, you have the ability to block it to only people you know. And many people just open it up. Well, I'm okay if everybody sees my Pinterest. I'm okay if everybody sees my Facebook. And all of that information gives hackers the ability to glom more information on you. So when they do target you, they have information they already know about you. So make sure you lock down your social media accounts. Make sure you use real passwords and don't share your passwords. I've even had conversation with my own kids who they'll say, well, log into my account. Here's my password. No, don't give anybody your password, not even your dad, because they can leave it around and somebody can hack into you. So, you know, use the security that's out there for you and update your systems. The average person we talked to today, they say, well, I don't want to do my phone update because when I do that, I'm not going to be able to get a call or I'm not going to be able to text. Well, do the updates. It is inconvenient, but make sure that you're updating all of your systems.
What do you say to the people who are just sort of exasperated about this? Because it seems like they're coming at you a variety of ways. All of our information is out there anyway, and so they feel like there's really no way to avoid it.
And I hear that frequently. Well, it doesn't matter because they're going to get it anyway. And anybody who really wants to get your information is going to get it. The thing is, hackers aren't targeting you specifically. They go out and they use scripts, they use tools that grab the easiest information out there. If you make it hard for them, they're not going to try to go after you. So do the things that you have to do to make it harder so that you don't become an easy target.
Thanks so much for the insight. Always appreciate the tips. Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force, joining us on Technology Thursday. At this time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday, still to come. An emergency fund is important even if you have solid investments.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Financial experts stress the importance of an emergency fund, but what if your investment portfolio is in really good shape? Can you just rely on that? Let's get more from Mark Horner, a wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Wheaton. Company's website, fairhavenwealth.com. Mark, good to have you back on the show. So a lot of people do believe that if they have enough in their investments, if their portfolio looks pretty good, well, then they don't have to worry about an emergency fund. Is that necessarily true?
Yeah, that's not a great way to go, Cisco, because typically you're going to access an emergency fund when things are not going well, and it's going to be unexpected, and a lot of times that can be associated with job loss, and job loss might mean that the economy is not doing so well, which might also mean that your investment portfolio is not doing so well. So that emergency fund is supposed to be there in time of need, where you can readily access it. You don't need to sell securities to satisfy a short-term need for cash. And that's different. That's a totally different philosophy than saving for retirement or college, which are long-term goals. So it should be different than your core investment portfolio.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the initial loss that you may take if you have to take money out at the wrong time, and also just the growth that you won't see if you have to take a big chunk of change out.
That's exactly right. And so for those emergency dollars, you want those readily accessible, easily turned into spendable cash. And so that money really should be in a high yield, which is tough to find in the current interest rate environment, but as high yield as you can find money market account, not in a stock and bond portfolio.
So how much is enough? It seems like there's some debate about how big your emergency fund has to be.
There is, and one of the reasons there's debate is I don't think there is a right answer. And so general rules of thumb are going to be 3 to 6 months of living expenses, but living expenses get defined differently for everybody. Some people, for their emergency fund, they might want their lifestyle completely uninterrupted, and so that's still going out to eat and going to the movies and having fun. Other people might think about the emergency fund in a situation where they're paring back to just the essentials, and so that might be housing, food, clearly, and any loan payments that you might have. So it's gonna vary. I would say for anybody who doesn't have an emergency fund, I wouldn't get hung up on what's the right dollar amount. I think getting started with one is the more important thing than the specific dollar amount.
Now, what about the hang up that some people have when they think 3 to 6 months of expenses? It seems so overwhelming even to get started with.
It does. I agree with that. And so, again, I'd encourage people not to focus on hitting that 3 or 6 month bogey just right out of the gate. One way that it killed two birds with one stone to get started funding an emergency fund is to look at the household clutter that you've got and think about maybe selling some things that have been in the garage that you haven't used for 7 or 8 years, or clothes that don't fit anymore, either too big or too small, as a way to raise a little bit of kind of found cash and put that money into an emergency fund to start it. And then just start building it over time.
All right, Mark Horner, thanks for the advice. Mark is a wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management based in Wheaton. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour, at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.